Welcome to This is Type 1, real life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. I'm Colleen Mitchell, and I've had type 1 diabetes for over 24 years. By day, I'm a process analyst in the power industry, and by night, I'm a writer, podcast host, and accountability coach. I'm passionate about type 1 diabetes education and showing others that this disease doesn't define me.
I'm Jesse Tuggy, and I've had type 1 diabetes for about 8 years now.
I love hiking and painting, and I'm looking forward to working as an engineer after college. My diagnosis has inspired me to take control of my future and learn everything I can about it.
Each week on the show, we'll talk about real life with type 1 diabetes, bring on cool people with connections to type 1, and above all, encourage you to understand that this disease doesn't have to hold you back. This isn't medical advice. This is life with type 1. Welcome to episode 53 of This is Type 1, real life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. Today, we're going a little deeper into managing type 1 diabetes in college. In episode 50, we discussed things you should learn before going to college, so there is some overlap. A quick reminder for our audience, if you have any questions about type 1 diabetes, please leave us a comment or send an email to colleen@inspiredforward.com. We answer listener questions in future episodes. Jesse, you are up with the win of the week.
Yes, and sticking with the theme of college this week, I actually got a college letter since I am that age of applying for colleges and going off to school. So Montana State University over the years has sent me a couple of packets of like, why you should go to us? My cousin goes there. And honestly, it's become my dream school over the last couple of years. But I never actually thought they were serious about me applying to them because I never really got as much stuff from them as I did other colleges. So one of the main turning points that I got when I went to Montana State to visit was it's smack dab in the middle between Yellowstone and Glacier, which is a big selling point to me because I would like to backpack across both of those one day, but we're going to get there. But anyways, so they sent me a couple of packets, majors and minors that I could take and what they were really about, which was fun to look into over the last couple of weeks and try and get excited about going. But as of last night or two nights ago for us, they sent me a letter saying I qualified for the Leader's Edge application, meaning not only do they see potential in me, but they have basically extended saying, we want you to apply for an early application to our school because we want you here. And so that was really amazing for me. And as of right now, I find out in 2 weeks. So that'll be about mid-August for us. So I'm very, very scared.
So right about when this episode airs, you should have your answer.
Yes, just about. So hopefully the next episode that you hear from us, I'll put in a little splash of like maybe a win or maybe a fail if I get into my dream school, but we'll see.
I don't think it would be a fail if you get in.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't. That wouldn't be a fail.
All right. I have the fail this week. And this is a throwback fail to my college days, which is not having a CGM at all, but especially when exercising. I rock climbed a lot, especially my last year. I swam a lot and I walked all over my really hilly campus, biked to and from my apartment/dorm to class, and only ever relied on my checker kit. It's kind of crazy to think about. Sometimes I left my apartment without a backup vial of test strips. And so I had to make do with one the whole day. I would have to rely on my physical sensations to tell if I was low or high and then correct the lows with something, and then correct the lows with sometimes multiple packets of fruit snacks. I remember coming off the rock wall once and testing my blood sugar, which was in the 40s, and I still felt like I was dropping. So I must have had like 5 packets of fruit snacks, which is about 90 grams of carbs. And then I had to walk back to my apartment, which was a half hour walk. So I sat on the floor in the gym for quite a while. Luckily, my roommate was with me, but that was kind of a major fail in college. Jesse, what is our hack this week?
So I recently came upon this video about this kid doing a review on a new type of test kit that he saw on Amazon and decided to purchase. So it was a small little device about 2 inches long, about 1/2 inch wide. And it looked basically like something that was about the size of half of an iPhone. So it was pretty small, you know, comparatively, but it was a test meter with a built-in poker and strip container. It's called the Dario, and it costs $34.90 on Amazon for 25 strips, a connector that connects to your phone and turns your phone into the meter, the poker, and 10 sterile pokers for sharps. So I don't know if I'll be getting it anytime soon, but it definitely sounds like something to look into, or potential to see our phones turned into actual test kits.
For many young adults, college is a rite of passage. It's 4 years to look forward to. And for many students, it's their first taste of freedom in living away from their parents and families. But for type 1 diabetics and their parents, college can be a daunting challenge of how do I stay safe and healthy with my diabetes while I'm by myself? How do I manage this in such a new environment? I've had type 1 diabetes since I was 2 years old. I graduated from college in 2014 after 3.5 years instead of 4. That's because I had an AA degree before I even went in, so I got to skip all the gen ed classes. And even though I didn't have many of the resources that I now use today, I still made it through unscathed, I guess mostly. But sometimes type 1 diabetics don't, and that's really scary. We can underestimate how much alcohol will affect us, especially if we've never had it before. And while I don't want to make anyone afraid of going to college or sending their diabetic kids off to college, it's a very real danger to drink, whether you're of age or not, if you don't know how it will affect your blood sugar and you aren't with people you trust. Some type 1 diabetics don't feel their lows or don't wake up to their alarms. This is a really big fear for parents. How can they keep their type 1 child safe when they're far away from home? I want to answer this question first because I mentioned the consequences of its absence in my fail this week. CGMs. I firmly believe that every type 1 diabetic, especially the ones in school and college, wear a CGM. For the students who don't wake up to alarms, it might be in their best interest to let their parents or doctor or even a good friend have access to their data through a follow app. My husband gets my blood sugars on his phone, and if he gets a high or a low alarm, especially a low alarm, he'll come wake me up if he doesn't hear me moving around or if it goes on for too long. I'm sure there were times in college that if I'd had a CGM or a follow-up for my parents, they would have called me to make sure I was okay. But I didn't. And they had to trust me to take care of myself. That's a big leap of faith to make for a lot of parents in general, but even more so for parents of type 1 diabetics. Now I'm going to go through a few topics that we touched briefly on in episode 50, but we're going to go more in depth. And the first one is having your own space in a dorm or apartment. When I lived in the dorms, I had 2 roommates, and changing my infusion site was an exercise in either making sure they were gone and the door was closed, or taking my supplies into our shared closet and then putting it on in there. I put my infusion sites on my butt, not gonna lie. So I wasn't about to, you know, drop trow right there in the room if my roommates were present. In the apartments, it was infinitely better because I had my own room. I had more space to spread out, stay up late if I wanted, and to change my infusion site without having to hide in a shared closet. In the apartment, and also in the dorms, I kept my big box of supplies in my closet. And the 2 other women I lived with and myself had our own sections in the pantry and the fridge, and I kept a big box of fruit snacks and a case of apple juice in my room with me. Those were my low snacks of choice back then. So what are you going to eat? I recommend you find a good grocery store nearby if you're in an apartment, or you can cook for yourself. The dining hall plans are expensive, and the food there isn't that great anyway. I think most colleges require freshmen to live in the dorms, which means you'll most likely be on a dining plan at least for your first year, and you'll have to spend at least your first year in college navigating the dining hall food. When I lived in Pullman at Washington State University, I went to the Winco in Moscow, Idaho, which was just 8 miles away. It was cheaper than Walmart, it had better quality food, and they also had bulk foods. Occasionally, I did go to Walmart, but not regularly, and only if I needed to pick up something really fast. If you're able to cook for yourself, which I highly recommend you figure out how to do ahead of time, it's best to know what kinds of food work well for your body, your blood sugar, and your lifestyle. I frequently wish I'd known about low-carb in college, but I didn't, and I dealt with the roller coaster of highs and lows that come from eating a high-carb diet. And intimately related with diet is exercise. So how do you come up with an exercise plan in college? As type 1 diabetics, we should never try to exercise for weight loss. Not kidding. Exercise is for the general health and mental health benefits, not for losing weight. I made the mistake of thinking for far too long that exercise is the most important thing for weight loss. In college, I had amazing access to exercise facilities. I had a bike, and there were a lot of hills, and there was a long, flat bike path. And yet I always had to correct for low blood sugars. And not surprisingly, I did not lose any weight. I gained weight. Exercise will probably stall weight loss anyway, and it did that for me, and it does for many other people. Exercise is still important, though, because it has other health benefits like improving your sleep quality, and over time, if you're not overcompensating for lows, it will lower your average blood sugar over time. Exercise increases the effectiveness of insulin, but we know from our low blood sugar episodes that a lot of insulin means we'll eat the kitchen afterward. If you want to exercise in college, run experiments on yourself and your body by testing how much different exercises drop or raise your blood sugar, how soon before you work out that you should preempt a low with a low snack, and remember that any amount of exercise counts. It doesn't have to be an hour-long, sweat-running-down-your-back workout for it to quote-unquote count. And also, don't force yourself into an exercise that you don't enjoy. If you don't like running, don't run. If you don't like swimming, don't swim. Figure out what exercises you enjoy and do those. Here's a list of the things that I could do when I was in college. We had swimming, rock climbing, both indoor and outdoor, and I did both. Well, I did mostly indoor. I went rock climbing outdoors once and decided that outdoor rock climbing is way too hard, and so I never did it again. We had weight training, treadmills, ellipticals, running track, basketball courts. There was a volleyball, a ropes course. They had boating on the Snake River. I kayaked once with our outdoor recreation center, and that was a really fun trip. I did a lot of biking, mostly on campus or on the bike trail to and from Idaho. They also had shadow boxing. They had dance classes. I took both ballroom and belly dancing classes, but I don't remember anything from either. There was hiking, skiing organized by the outdoor recreation center, but I never went with that group. I usually went by myself or with friends. It's spin class, yoga, Pilates classes, and probably a lot more that I don't even remember. My favorites were swimming and rock climbing. The default, though, was walking across campus and biking, but my blood sugar tanked like all the time. I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but whenever you leave your dorm or your apartment, take your low snacks with you. You never know when you might plummet on a walk to class or if you need a boost right before you go into a lab. And this all ties together with avoiding the freshman 15 or 20, and that refers to the average amount of weight that freshmen put on their first year. So continuing with the theme that you can't exercise to lose weight, you may have heard the saying that weight loss happens in the kitchen, not the gym. Gaining weight as a type 1 diabetic increases your stress levels. The extra weight can absolutely affect how well your insulin works. My total daily dose in college must have been between 50 and 70 units a day, and I had no idea that that was the primary reason why I was gaining so much weight. So pay attention to what you're eating. Do your best to eat as low carb as possible. A good way to start is by completely eliminating sugar and flour, except for your low snacks. And don't try to use exercise for weight loss. Some people do a lot better on the keto diet than others. Some people feel better with an obscene amount of vegetables in their diet, which can include the starchy, higher carb vegetables. It just depends on your body, and it's up to you to experiment to find out what feels best. Also, you'll save a lot of money by not buying so much junk food. So what about like the college-y part of college, you know, attending classes? When you're attending class, the first class will probably actually usually cover the syllabus. That's just the class outline, the schedule, when tests are, when homework assignments are due. Usually the first class is the shortest and the easiest to go to. So make sure that you take the time either before or after class to approach the professor and let him or her know that you have type 1 diabetes and you might be eating or drinking during class, testing your blood sugar, giving insulin, the whole nine yards. So be sure to let them know that your insulin pump or CGM might make noise. And if it does, to not worry about it. You should be prepared to answer questions from both your professor and from classmates, especially if your alarms sound before you've had a chance to talk to the professor. Make sure before classes even start, maybe during orientation week, to go to your campus disability center and get accommodations. If you ever need to use them, you'll have them available. Having accommodations can get you extra time on a timed test or quiz, possibly allow for a deferred exam if your blood sugar is dangerously high during the scheduled time. And it gives you a defense for bringing low snacks and devices like a CGM receiver into a testing room with you. Because sometimes a proctor will mistake a CGM or an insulin pump for a phone and then they will get mad. A helpful person on Facebook brought up that it also might be a good idea to bring a quiet low snack with you to class. That is, a low snack that doesn't make a lot of noise when you open it. My Smarties rolls are really crinkly, but when I was in college, my low snack of choice was fruit snacks. And those packets open really easily. They just tear along the side and they're very quiet. Another thing that type 1 diabetics should get is kind of a quick primer on managing your emotions. Probably the biggest thing that type 1 diabetics have to deal with in college is all the extra stress. Not only are you on your own, you're managing your diabetes on your own too, which means bringing your insulin and low snacks with you at all times, knowing how much you have and when you'll need to order more, keeping your blood sugars in range or at least stable during tests and when you're exercising, or even just walking across campus. Managing our emotions is not something that we're taught to do. The simplest way of explaining it is this. Managing your emotions means that you take responsibility for all of them. Nobody but you is responsible for how you feel. Not your terrible professor, not your catty roommate, not the ex-boyfriend, not the classes, and not the school itself. Being able to manage your emotions means that you're an emotional adult. It doesn't mean never showing emotion or never feeling any negative emotion. It just means that you don't blame anyone else for how you feel. If I'd known how to manage my emotions in college, I might have gotten way more involved in campus clubs, off-campus events, maybe even go to a party. I was too wrapped up in what other people might think of me and how I would feel about it to realize that it doesn't matter what other people think of me. And it's none of my business anyway. I let myself procrastinate on homework. I got frustrated and fed up when the homework got difficult. I didn't practice the discipline of doing my work first and then binging an entire season of Archer in one night. And I did that. There was also some times where I was binging entire seasons of Buffy and wondering if I could get all 7 seasons before finals week. The answer was no. In the last, I want to say year or so, is when I've started learning how to manage my emotions. And it's kind of scary that it took this long because I'm 27. I should have known this by now, but I didn't. And so I'm grateful that I'm learning it now and that I can pass it on to you, our listeners. Now, in the course of doing the outline for this episode, I asked some groups on Facebook for their tips and their experiences in managing diabetes in college. And so I'm going to read some of their responses now. In all honesty, I didn't do anything different than I did before I went to college. I made sure I had supplies with me when I went to class along with low snacks, did my best to count carbs from dining hall food, and just lived my life. I know this wasn't the answer you're looking for, but going from one life stage to another really isn't all that difficult with diabetes as long as you know what you're doing. Have a plan, be consistent, and enjoy college. I was diagnosed right before my senior year of college and didn't receive my pump or Dexcom until after I graduated. I'd recommend connecting with a type 1 club at college. My club would get together for lunches and hangouts. I had 2 type 1 diabetic friends who really helped me learn how to manage my diabetes. They were also there to vent to, or if I needed help when we were downtown at the bars and stuff. Don't wander around without your insulin. I would leave my insulin behind and then not have it when I needed it, so I wouldn't take it. I'm currently going through college, and the biggest thing I have to keep in mind is keeping my stress under control. For me, stress affects everything from the blood sugars directly to my eating habits, sleep habits, coping habits. If I'm too stressed, then it's harder to stay diligent with my diabetes. I've found that having a decent schedule every day that doesn't change too much has helped me so much. Obviously, the things I eat change daily, but how many times I eat and the time has helped me with control. So has me watching what I'm eating and not just shoveling junk food down my throat. Tell your professors. That way they don't get mad if you snack during a low or if your CGM/pump goes off. Work with the disabilities office as a backup in case you need to utilize them. I registered with disability services and always had conversations with professors. In terms of community, I was the president of our college diabetes network chapter. In terms of parties and alcohol, setting middle of the night alarms to check blood glucose and not bolusing for carbs. That's a good idea. And those were the highlights from our tips from Facebook. So I'm going to walk you guys through what a typical college day looked like for me. And it took a bit of remembering. I don't remember a lot of the details because honestly, college was not that memorable for me in terms of my diabetes. It was college and it was life with diabetes like normal. So if I had an early class, I would wake up with just enough time to make something to eat it, pack my lunch, and then either bike to class or walk. I would pack lunch with me if I was going to be on campus around lunchtime because I didn't want to hike back to my apartment for lunch. I would try not to have anything that needed to be refrigerated, but if I did, I would try to eat it first so that it didn't spoil. Although I did bring a lot of Hot Pockets to class, and those were usually frozen when I took them out of the freezer, so they just kind of thawed in my backpack until lunchtime. I had a lot of Hot Pockets in college. My first year, I would get lunch at the Student Union building, and I would use my dining account to get something from the restaurants up there. I went to Panda Express and Freshens a lot, which kind of makes me cringe now. Sometimes all I had was a lab or two on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The other days I had like 8 a.m. classes and sometimes back-to-back classes. But if those labs started late enough, then I would sleep in a bit. I would wake up, maybe do some homework or something else beforehand, and then go to the lab, making sure I had low snacks or food with me just in case. I did drink a lot of coffee in college, and I would usually bring a travel mug to the engineering building with me in the morning. I would test my blood sugar occasionally in class. I wouldn't try to hide it or anything, and I always answered any questions that people had. One time in my physics class, the student behind me saw my insulin pump tubing and asked me about it, and we had a short conversation about someone he or she knew who had diabetes. And I actually mentioned this encounter in our episode on diabetics in the wild. My first year when I lived in the dorms, I rode my bike a lot. I rode my bike less often my next few years because I was living in the apartments, which were farther away. And I also had a car. So it was more convenient for me to get a parking pass to the lot next to the engineering buildings, drive over in the morning, and then use that as my base of operations for the rest of the day. And then sometimes I would walk up to Pita Pit and get a pita to bring back with me for lunch if I didn't bring lunch with me. I have had a lot of time to think about what I would do differently. If I could do stuff differently, not including any of the COVID stuff, if I could go back and give my pre-college self advice, the first thing I would tell her is that she should switch to low carb immediately. I'd tell her that exercise is for generic health benefits. It's not for weight loss. And if I'm correcting my lows too much, it means I'm using too much insulin. I'm positive that if I hadn't had such a trash diet in college, then I would have been a lot more focused, a lot less tired, and probably a lot less stressed. Maybe I would have had even better grades out of it. I'd also spend more time building self-discipline and studying before the fun time. So I would get all of my homework done before I tried to binge an entire season of Archer in one night. I was considered a quote-unquote smart kid in elementary and high school, which meant that I didn't exactly develop a good study ethic before college. I would definitely learn how to manage my emotions. I would get into all of the coaching stuff and self-coaching stuff way early. I wouldn't blame others for how I felt, especially when I felt terrible. And I did feel terrible, probably 50% of the time. I'd also try to make more friends. I would join diabetes clubs. I don't actually know if there were any diabetes clubs on campus when I was there. Maybe I would start a CDN chapter. I would maybe just be more social in general. Right now, I don't talk to anyone from college except my husband, Tim, and my author friend, Haley. I barely talk to my roommates anymore, which is kind of sad. There are a lot of things that I sometimes wish I'd done differently, but those are the big ones. And now Jesse has a whole bunch of questions for me.
Yes, because I didn't realize I had this many until I actually applied to college. So we're just going to get into it. Some of these aren't necessarily diabetic questions. They're more like general, what can I expect in college questions. So the first one being, how much privacy can I expect in the dorm rooms?
Well, before COVID, not much. But I've seen a couple news articles from some colleges, I think maybe even one in Montana, where all the students are getting their own dorms. Like it's all single occupancy.
Well, that'll be different. Okay.
Yeah. But when I was in college, at least in my dorm, I had 3 people in my corner room when it was supposed to be 2. And so it was even less privacy than I otherwise would have had.
I've heard a lot of bad things about morning 8 a.m. classes. What's so bad about them?
Not really much. It just depends on how late you go to sleep and how well you do with waking up early. I would often stay up until midnight, like 11 or midnight, and I would still have an 8 a.m. class, which meant I would get up like almost right before the class with just enough time to get out the door. But in general, 8 a.m. classes are not that bad. I would actually prefer 8 a.m. classes now because it gets them out of the way. You're fresh in the morning. You pay more attention in the morning. And you probably retain more too.
What food should I keep in my dorms? Like groceries rather than cafeteria food?
So the first thing that comes to mind is non-perishable snacks that are not loaded with sugar and flour. If you have a mini fridge, then you can stock it with like hard-boiled eggs, string cheese, maybe some deli meat. Basically stuff that you would want to have for breakfast if you didn't want to go to the dining hall for breakfast. You could have, can't really have cereal when you're on low carb, but I did have cereal when I was in college in my dorm. I had a bag of cereal on top and some milk, and then I would just have cereal before I went to class.
So is there a way to keep my diabetic supplies, unquote, out of reach of my dorm mates?
Well, I had a trunk, like an actual like footlocker trunk, and I had a combination lock, which I still have. So that's a good combination to keep any of your valuables safe and out of reach of your dorm mates. But I mean, what are you worried about your dorm mates doing with your diabetes supplies?
Well, just getting into it, like breaking like a Humalog vial or something like that, or just accidentally like, oh, I think this was mine, and then going through all of my diabetic stuff and now I don't know where or what I have.
Well, in terms of keeping your insulin out of reach, that'll be probably pretty hard in the dorms because, I mean, there's not really that much privacy. And if you have a mini fridge in there, it's likely that all of your roommates will be using the same mini fridge. Mm-hmm. So it would be really good to have a conversation with your roommates ahead of time saying, this is my insulin. This is breakable. This is also extremely expensive to replace. And if you break it, I will probably be not suing you, but charging you.
Okay, that's a good incentive.
At least if the insurance company doesn't replace it.
Okay. So on that kind of same topic, how do I bring up the conversation about boundaries with my roommates? So boundaries with my stuff, and then also emotional boundaries as well.
Well, boundaries with your physical belongings should be a given. I actually met one of my roommates before I moved in with her. We both went to the same event beforehand, and we met on the bus going to the event, and we decided on the bus that we would be roommates. And then we ended up getting a third roommate kind of foisted upon us. So I already knew one of my roommates going into it. And it's kind of an unspoken rule that you just don't touch your roommate's stuff. I mean, it's their stuff. You don't touch it. That was kind of an unspoken rule for my room, at least. We didn't really get into each other's stuff, and it would have been weird if we did. For like emotional boundaries, can you kind of give me a little bit more to go on?
So like one experience that somebody told me about was like their roommate would bring her boyfriend over quite a bit, and they never really talked about like how that really bothered her, or where they would like she got teased on for being the only one in the room without having a boyfriend, I guess you'd say. This is just a good, like an example that she was telling me about. Mm-hmm. But like, how do you bring that up? Like, I don't appreciate this without having conflicts.
So have you ever seen The Big Bang Theory?
Yes.
Sheldon has a roommate agreement. So it might be a good idea to draft a list of all of the things that you would expect from a roommate, or expect a roommate to respect on your behalf, and all the things that might be difficult to bring up in regular conversation, especially if it's happened after the fact.
Okay.
And then when you get to college and you meet your roommate, ask her, hey, would you mind sitting down for a bit to talk about some boundaries that we should go over? Because I want us both to have a good relationship. I want us to not resent each other and stuff like that.
Okay. And then how long do you think I should wait to get a job when I'm in college?
Do you mean having a job like when you're actually a student?
Yeah.
So, I never had a job in college. Mm-hmm. Are you planning to do work study?
I don't know.
maybe a month or two, month. Just let yourself settle in and then look for jobs on campus. There's always a campus kind of job board. and maybe check out the surrounding town for job opportunities. But depending on what you want to do and what's out there, might take you a month to both settle in and find something.
Okay. So my final question was, what kitchen utilities should I get for my dorm, or have my parents get me for my dorm? Like a microwave, a mini fridge, toaster oven, a hot plate kind of thing?
Well, dorms will usually have a common area with a microwave, a sink, maybe a stove with an oven. And the ground floor in my dorm had a full kitchen with a full refrigerator, but I would never have stored any food there because people will steal it. It was really close to the laundry facilities, so people could theoretically start their laundry, bake a batch of cookies, and then go upstairs with both of them. As for a mini fridge, yes, definitely get a mini fridge. You probably won't need the microwave since that'll be there already, most likely. You can also ask people on campus already. So if you already know somebody in the dorms, or you have somebody you're talking to in the office that manages dorm assignments, then you can ask which dorms have microwaves and things like that. Mm-hmm. You probably won't need a toaster oven. Those can get bulky and you'll probably be space limited in your dorm anyway. Some dorms actually might have restrictions on hot plates because they can burn surfaces. Mm-hmm. But I would definitely get a candle warmer. A candle warmer would be really good for keeping a mug of coffee hot on your desk. And especially if you're doing a lot of homework, you're going to want to have a lot of coffee and you're going to want to have it hot. Oh yeah. My husband said that set a timer for your laundry so that people don't steal it, because that has happened before. People have gone down and taken laundry out of the washer before it's done, just put it on top and then use that washer. Or they've just taken the clothes that are in it. So frequently, my first year when I was in the dorm, I would sit down there with my laundry and watch it while it did stuff. And I would have like a book with me, and it was really annoying. Anyway, back to the utensils or utilities. I think it was, what did you call them? Appliances.
Oh, yeah. Utilities.
Utilities or appliances. Okay. I had a Brita filter, which was really good because a lot of the water in places that is not home tastes weird. And it's probably because of how hard or soft it is. So I had a Brita filter to help the water taste less soft. Kind of, yeah.
Okay. And that's just like, that's like one of those water pitchers, right?
Yeah, it's a Brita water filter, or you could get a Pure water filter. Also you can bring bowls, plates, cutlery, so knives, forks, spoons, straws, travel mug if you're going to bring your coffee to class, a lunchbox, ice packs, especially if you're going to be in an apartment later. So our spotlight this week is on President Trump's executive order that he says will reduce the price of insulin to pennies a day. Trump signed the order on July 24th, and it also covered the rising cost of injectable epinephrine. As of this recording, we're not sure how the savings will get passed to the patients, but it's a huge step in the right direction to make insulin truly affordable for all. I'm going to read some excerpts from the executive order. Quote, "Insulin is a critical and life-saving medication that approximately 8 million Americans rely on to manage diabetes. Likewise, injectable epinephrine is a life-saving medication used to stop severe allergic reactions. The price of insulin in the United States has risen dramatically over the past decade. The list price for a single vial of insulin today is often more than $250, and most patients use at least two vials per month. As for injectable epinephrine, recent increased competition is helping to drive prices down. Nevertheless, the price for some types of injectable epinephrine remain more than $600 per kit. While Americans with diabetes and severe allergic reactions may have access to affordable insulin and injectable epinephrine through commercial insurance or federal programs such as Medicare and Medicaid, many Americans still struggle to purchase these products. Federally qualified health centers, or FQHCs, receive discounted prices on prescription drugs. Due to the sharp increases in list prices for many insulins and some types of injectable epinephrine in the recent years, many of these products may be subject to the penny pricing policy when distributed to FQHCs, meaning FQHCs may purchase the drug at a price of 1 penny per unit measure. These steep discounts, however, are not always passed through to low-income Americans at the point of sale. Those with low incomes can be exposed to high insulin and injectable epinephrine prices, as they often do not benefit from discounts negotiated by insurers or the federal or state governments. it is the policy of the United States to enable Americans without access to affordable insulin and injectable epinephrine through commercial insurance or federal programs, such as Medicare or Medicaid, to purchase these pharmaceuticals from an FQHC at a price that aligns with the cost at which FQHC acquired the medication. The three named provisions for this cost savings are for individuals with low incomes, as determined by the Secretary, who A, have a high cost sharing requirement for either insulin or injectable epinephrine, B, have a high unmet deductible, or C, have no health insurance, end quote. Personally, I have great insurance, a low deductible, and my insulin is $160 every 3 months. So for me, it's really affordable already. But I think this executive order will help drive the cost down and make this life-saving hormone affordable for the people who desperately need it to survive, especially the people who are rationing it, which is not a good idea ever. Jesse, what is our question for the audience?
So our lovely question for you, our lovely audience, is how did you manage your diabetes in college? What are your big struggles and what were some big bright spots? Let us know in the comments or by sending us an email. Also, another question is if you're going into college, how do you plan to manage it? Because I need help.
That is it for this episode of This is Type 1. You can find the show notes at inspiredforward.com/episode53. That's the number 53. And if you have an idea for an upcoming episode or a guest request, please leave us a comment or send an email. You can get straight to our podcast page by going to thisistype1.com. Our music is by Joseph McDade. This is the perfect time to learn how to manage your mind. If you're stressed, burned out, overwhelmed, and want some help getting back on track and honoring your commitments to yourself, sign up for accountability coaching at inspiredforward.com/coaching. I'm on all social media as @inspiredforward, and our email is colleen@inspiredforward.com.
And I'm on Instagram as @JJ_CrystalKAT. Please feel free to send me questions or comments you have about the show or about type 1 diabetes.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, please share it with your friends, family, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, since that really helps other people find us. Be sure to listen next week when we talk about living on your own with diabetes, meaning after college, and when you're fully supporting yourself on your own. Remember, you control your diabetes. It doesn't control you.
Hey, if you like what you're listening to on this podcast, you have to join us in the Half Dead Pancreas Club. It's my private community where you'll connect face-to-face with other people with type 1 diabetes, get personalized emotional support, and learn how to handle anything T1D throws at you. Join us over at inspiredforward.com/community. I can't wait to see you there.